Good morning, I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you along with us today as we take a Roman holiday. Despite the weak dollar, Americans will travel abroad in droves this year, with Italy named the New Year's number one international destination by the United States Tour Operators Association. Rome, which is Italy's capital city and the cultural epicenter, is also a top pick in 08. It ranks fourth most popular travel destination worldwide, according to Carlson Wagonlit's recent travel trends survey. With so many people flocking to the Eternal City, how can travelers get the most out of the Roman holiday while saving time and money? One way would be to pick up a brand new guidebook, which has just come out, called Una Bella Vista Rome, How to Tour Italy. It is written by a first-generation Italian-American, Anthony Capozzoli. He earned degrees in art history and classical history from the University of Iowa, resides in Chicago, where he works as a client developmental solution specialist for LexisNexis, and it's a pleasure to have him on the telephone with us today. Anthony, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Jim. How are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks very much for agreeing to appear on short notice.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm happy to do it.
This came in just a few days ago, and I thought, boy, this is pretty exciting, and how am I ever going to be able to work a show about travel to Italy? Because my wife and two other couples went to Rome and southern Italy last September.
Oh, great. How'd you like it?
Well, it was wonderful, of course. I mean, what is not to like about touring in Italy? Rome has so many things to see. We were there for three nights and, just scratched the surface, really. And,
sure.
And then went south from there, and that's just gorgeous.
Isn't it wonderful? Did you get down to the Amalfi Coast and everything to see Pompeii and everything?
We did indeed. And I, as a matter of fact, I happen to have my pictures here, and so I'll give you a slideshow as we go along, if you're willing.
Sure.
Let's invite the audience in as well. So if you have been to Italy and you'd like to rave about it, or if you're thinking about going to Italy, especially to Rome, why then give us a call. The number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, it's toll-free at 1-800-642-1234. Your family grew up in the area of Naples. And most people's shot of Naples in the last couple of months has been the difficulties in trash collection. That's not really what Naples is about, though, is it?
Absolutely not. It's kind of sad, actually, that makes the headlines in the press. But unfortunately, that is the circumstance down there today. But there are so many wonderful things about Naples specifically that is often overlooked by American travelers because of a bad reputation preceded by, unfortunately, gangster movies and kind of the mafia and things that are down there. But if you're not part of that world, it's a very safe and fun environment, I think, with regard to the food, the culture. You've been to Pompeii and Herculaneum.
Yes.
The Amalfi Coast. So it really is wonderful, and it's sad that it's getting such bad press these days.
What was it about your first visit to Rome, which was, about 10, 11 years ago now?
Yeah, it's been a while.
You had been studying art, and especially the artists of Italy, as a child. So did you feel this natural pull and gravitation toward that?
I did. Having studied art history and classical history, things like the Iliad and the Odyssey, the Aeneid, I just loved it. I went back with my family and got to enjoy kind of living in Italy and also touring at the same time with the family and things that we had down there. And it was wonderful to be able to put all of these wonderful artworks that I'd been studying into real-life perspective and get a real appreciation of what the artists were trying to depict in each and every one of the, whether it be a painting, a sculpture, the architecture, even down to the architecture of homes and things. So that's what really kind of brought it to life for me, and the passion was ignited. I mean, I already had it, but putting it all together made it just a fantastic fantastic trip for me, and kind of drove me to decide to write some guidebooks and record audio guides like I have.
Anthony Capozzoli is our guest. His first book, unabellavista.com, is an address that you can find how the book can help you plan your trip to Italy. We took this trip in September, that was a delightful time of year to do it. What are your favorite times of the year? I suppose every day would be fine, but
sure.
if you could only pick a time of year, what would it be?
I would probably go in September, to be completely honest with you, as you did. And the reason for that, the flow of the tourists and travelers is a little bit less. So you don't have to wait in line quite so long at some of the major locations and sites that you're able to see. The weather is fantastic, especially around Rome and Florence. It might be a little bit chilly at night, but it's kind of a nice break from the heat of the day. And then you might even be able to participate in some of the harvesting festivals and all of the festivals that are going on in and around Rome at that time. So I think September is fantastic. In fact, this year when I go, I'm going the last week of October, the first week of November, to go a little bit later to see what it's like as far north as I can get and then try to enjoy some of the cooler weather up north.
Do you lead tours when you do this as well?
I'd like to someday. I don't do it quite yet. I've got some partners that do that, that I work with, Context Travel and Walks Inside Rome. They handle kind of walking tours, but my hope, after I release my next book, which is Una Bella Vista, Florence, and Siena, is to move to Italy in about 18 months, and then give people walking tours in and around Rome, Florence, Siena, and potentially Venice and Naples.
Pinch yourself, because I'm not sure you're not in heaven then, if that's the case.
Isn't that great? That would be such a great life. I get to wake up to a wonderful espresso, give people walking tours, live the Italian dream, if you will, and write my books at the same time. So it would be a great life.
And have great food all along the way.
Exactly.
Jim in Green Bay, let's get you into the conversation. Are you interested in going to Italy?
Yes. My wife and I are planning a trip over there maybe in the next year or two. And I think the gentleman's answered the first question I had, was what was the best time to go over there around Tuscany and Florence to avoid the crowds and get some good weather. I think he said September, but my question would be early September, late September, for the best to avoid the crowds and the best weather. And then any recommendations of length of stay if you want to see potentially Rome, Florence, Tuscany, and Naples?
Sure. Great question. I think middle to the end of September is a great time to go. Like I said, the crowds have subsided a little bit. And my advice, if you are trying to make that trip, I would probably use two places as your mainstay locations. I would stay in Rome for part of the trip and then take the train. It's called Circumvesuviana from Naples. You can take the train from Rome to Naples and then get down to enjoy that part of Italy. And then after that, I would take the train for the second part of your trip up to Siena and make Siena your home base, and then take day trips into Florence a couple times. This way you get to enjoy and love the wonderful city of Florence. But I think Siena, being a smaller city, and it's a walled medieval city, it's absolutely beautiful. I spent 2 weeks there this summer, would be the other place I would stay. So I would stay in Rome and Siena and then take day trips from Siena to Florence and then day trips from Rome to Naples. This way you've got a home base. You're not constantly lugging your luggage around, which gets to be kind of a pain on the trains. And you get the best of both worlds, I think. You get the glories of Rome during the day and the night, and then Siena at night is, without a doubt, one of the most beautiful places in Italy.
You're talking at least a two-week type of thing, then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. In order to be able to do both Naples south of Rome and do the northern part, you're going to need a couple of weeks, and that's stretching it.
Yeah, I think 2 weeks, 10 to 14 days, with good time management. You can get some tips and ideas about how to make that happen on my website, unabellavista.com, to help plan your trip and make sure you're able to fit everything in comfortably, which is important, without rushing around.
You'll find, Jim, if you go to Siena in the evening about 7 o'clock, all of the couples come out and promenade in the piazza. It's just a splendid procession to sit there with a glass of wine and just relax.
It's wonderful.
Let's go to Teresa next in Stevens Point. And Teresa, what's in your mind?
Hi. I'll just make a couple comments, and then I'll take the rest of the answers off the air.
All right.
I was really fortunate. I'm Italian by osmosis. I worked for an Italian hair color company for 15 years and had the pleasure of going to Italy 5 times as well as some other countries. But what I never understood was what I was seeing until I quit my job and am now a full-time college student and took art history classes in London and saw personally some of the master's work, which I never really understood. And now, since I've never been to Rome, I just want to get back so I can look at Bernini's work, which I never did get to see. But it truly is, of all my worldly travels, Italy is the best food, the best wine, the best company, the best people, and it's just wonderful. So it was a delight. I had to pull over on the side of the road, my first call to NPR. So thank you. I'm really enjoying the show.
Thanks for the call, Teresa.
Thank you.
It sounds as if this book would be great for her because your focus is really on the art, some great photography, and you talk about each of the paintings.
Yeah, indeed. That was one of the things, and I like a lot of the other guidebooks that exist out there, and I've used them personally myself, but one thing I think that some of the other guidebooks didn't provide is some background and detail in a fun and colorful way to kind of understand the image, appreciate its background, and some of the personal stories about the artists, which I think really bring a lot of the artwork to life, to understand kind of the agony of Michelangelo when he was painting the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel and how he did not want to do it. He refused it. Two or three times before the Pope pretty much said, if you don't do it, I'm going to excommunicate you. And keep in mind, that was his very first full fresco painting that he'd ever done on his own as a master, because he considered himself a sculptor. And to understand that and appreciate how hard he worked by himself to create this wonderful ceiling and image is fantastic. And a lot of the other guidebooks, I thought, didn't really put that stuff into perspective besides saying this is a ceiling painted by Michelangelo. So my hope and my goal with the guidebook and the audio guide is to provide that background and information along with music of the day, if you will, to kind of really give you a 360-degree view of each of the pieces of artwork that you'll be seeing. And not only that, but how to manage your time with the itineraries that I've built so that you can fit everything in comfortably and in sequential order when you're walking.
Do you have the guidebook in your hands there?
Yes, sir.
On page 84 is the letter that was written by Michelangelo to a friend on his painting The Ceiling.
Yep.
And read the translation of what he says to his friend about that job.
Sure. Happy to do it. It begins, I've got myself a goiter from this strain, as water gives the cats in Lombardy, or maybe it is in some other country. My belly's pushed by force beneath my chin. My beard toward heaven, I feel the back of my brain upon my neck. I grow the breast of a harpy. My brush, above my face, continually makes it a splendid floor by dropping down. My loins have penetrated to my paunch. My romps a crupper, as a counterweight. And pointless the unseeing steps I go. In front of me, my skin is being stretched, while it folds up behind and forms a knot. I am bending like a Syrian bow. And judgment hence must grow, born in mind, peculiar and untrue. You cannot shoot well when the gun's askew. John, come to the rescue of my dead painting now, and of my honor. I'm not in a good place, and I am no painter.
That's pretty interesting, and especially in line of the art that he produced in that precarious position.
Yeah.
Therese, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And another visitor to Rome would be Katie in Burlington. Hello, Katie.
I just had to call in because I just loved Rome. I've been there. I was there before, and I don't really remember it as well because I was 19, and I think my goals in life were different than when you're 45. But I went with my 11-year-old son, and we walked and walked and walked to the point where he yelled at me, but I don't blame him. But I feel like it's the only way to really see Rome is just to walk, and it was just amazing all the things that you would come across. And one thing that I thought was just so, like, awe-inspiring was, is it called the Pantheon?
Pantheon.
Yeah, oh, I loved it. And then the other thing was on the corner, remember where they have the four sculptures and fountains?
Yep, in Piazza Navona.
Oh, love it. Everything is just beautiful there, and the food is fantastic, and the people were wonderful, and I didn't think it was that costly, compared to things. But I'm wondering if you were down in Sorrento, because I have one question about Sorrento.
Sure, I've been.
You know when you cross over this bridge, it's close to the train station, and it's like a big ravine, and there's part of the village that was just left to be overgrown?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering why they did that.
Well,
do you know anything about that?
I don't know too much about that. From what I remember on the kind of the walking tour I did with one of my partners, I think it comes with the instability of the ground around it. So
okay.
I think that the reason they left it that way is it just, foundationally speaking, it wasn't able to support with the ravine there and the rest of Sorrento growing outward, homes and businesses being built there.
Okay. Well, that was a great answer because most people that have gone there have never seen it, and I took a picture, and it's just so beautiful, and you just wonder why. And so,
right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I'm going to go back, that's for sure.
Well, definitely. Katie, thank you very much. I think that anyone who goes there vows that they're going to have to return, no question about it.
We're
talking today with Anthony Capozzoli of Chicago. He is the author of Una Bella Vista, Rome. It's his first travel book in a series that he plans. Una Bella Vista, Florence and Siena is coming next, and you can find out more about him and his work at unabellavista.com. It's unabellavista.com. And we'll be back with your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn. Happy to have you along with us today as we talk about one of my favorite places, and that would be Italy and Rome. And our guest, Anthony Capozzoli, is someone who's traveled there several times, and he has a background that includes art history. And his family is from Campania in Sicily. Italy is in his blood. And he's put together this guidebook, Una Bella Vista, Rome, How to Tour Italy. And again, Anthony, thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Let's talk about what you have put together. You've done research your entire life to put this book together. So what will people find in there?
In my opinion, they will find the most important things to see while in Rome and the easiest way to enjoy seeing them. So what I've done is I've picked out what I figure kind of the must-see sites of Rome and organize them in walking tours, supported by an audio guide that's available on iTunes for download or via CD, whichever you prefer, so that you can walk the streets independently and dig in all the sites, as well as get the background and kind of the full-color information about each of the sites that you're enjoying in walking order, which I think is very important, so you don't get lost, because it is a bit difficult to traverse European cities, specifically Rome, because it's so big and the streets are very windy. So without a map or a little bit of guidance, it's pretty easy to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
So with the combination of my book and audio guide, you're able to do that well and fit everything in.
And in there you have seven itineraries. Of course, you cover ancient Rome. And what else would people find as far as areas of Rome itself?
They will be able to find information about ancient Rome, specifically everything from the Colosseum to the Roman Forum. I have a Vatican tour in there as well, which is Vatican City, which is in and of itself its own tour. I've got a Borghese tour so that you can enjoy the Borghese Palace and the sites in and around that. A Barberini tour, which covers the Palazzo di Barberini, which is of the Barberini family, former pope. And then I also have Vincoli, which is where you'll find Michelangelo's Moses.
Mm-hmm.
And last but not least, it's called Navona Pantheon, which is kind of dead center in Rome, which covers the Pantheon, Piazza Navona, and a couple of critical churches, if you will, to see the wonderful artworks of Caravaggio.
And if you'd like to join the conversation, use our Madison numbers. In Madison, the number 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. And Robert and Nina has been waiting patiently. Robert, go ahead.
Yes, I'm just calling to say that I'd love to go to Italy. There's a lot of places that I'd like to go to, but I have a real problem with Americans' obsession with flying all over the world and adding to the pollution, and I don't like it. The last time I was on a plane was when I flew back from Vietnam in 1969. That was about 39 years ago. There's plenty of places in the United States to go to that are close at hand, a heck of a lot closer than Italy or any place overseas, and I would encourage people to see this country instead of flying around the world.
All right. Do you hear that from time to time, that we're too frequent to travel and that we ought to be sticking closer to home?
I do hear it on occasion, and I think it really just comes down to the individual. I mean, some people prefer to remain domestically here and visit all of the wonderful cities that we have here in the United States, and there are plenty, of course. In fact, I just returned from Washington, D.C. to enjoy our culture and monuments there a couple of days ago. So I think if you want to pick one or the other, or maybe do both to expand your horizons and enjoy and appreciate some of the other world cultures.
Thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it, Robert. And Lisa in La Crosse is next. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I am a college student up here in La Crosse, and I'm calling because I have never been to Italy before, but I'm going with a course that I'm taking on St. Francis to to Assisi, of course, and we're going to travel a little bit around Umbria, and I was just wondering what information or anything that you knew about there, and I'll take my answer off the air.
All right.
It's a great choice. You will love Umbria, and specifically Assisi. It's a wonderful city. I liken it to a smaller Siena, of course, by size, but in its beauty, it compares very, very well with some of the medieval towns, especially in the Tuscan and Umbrian hillside. One of my favorite things that I did when I was in Assisi, at the top, you can actually enter the castle and walk the ramparts, if you will. And it's interesting because I'm not a very tall person, but I was continuously banging my head on the top of the arch, walking through and looking through the little slots that they would leave for defense, for use of arrows and things to defend the castle. So besides seeing the church, where you can actually see the robe of St. Francis and the rope that he would tie around his waist, and enjoy all of the wonderful artwork by some of, like Giotto and some of the more famous older Italian artists, you can see the castle, which is fantastic. And there's a wonderful piazza that's got some embellishment from ancient Roman Empire all the way through the Middle Ages, which is, it's a wonderful city, and I highly recommend it. And more importantly, when you're visiting the Umbrian hillside, you can see from Assisi, the Umbrian countryside, maybe rent a car or take a train and extend yourself out to some of the smaller cities in and around Umbria and really dig into some of the culture out there. They've got some wonderful wines and great cuisine that is often overlooked by Americans because it's not quite as famous as the Tuscan hillside. So good for you for going to Umbria because it's one of my favorite places in Italy.
You include some dishes to consider when arriving in Italy, and they are on page 9 and include spaghetti alla Grecia.
Yes.
Talk about that.
It's fantastic. It is a unique experience. It comes from literally the pork of the jowl of the pig. It's a wonderful dish. It tastes a little bit like what we're used to here. We call it carbonara. It's not quite exactly the same thing because it's not as creamy as we serve it here. But it is one of those dishes that is a unique experience, and you'll find it virtually everywhere in Italy, specifically in Lazio, which is the region that Rome is in, and that's why I put it in the dishes to consider while in Rome. But it's one of those things that you have to absolutely try, and the Italians are famous for using some of the best ingredients that you can find, and that particular dish hits right in the head, and it's a little bit spicy with the red pepper in it, so you can't go wrong.
You also have various dining tips, including portions that are found in Italy are smaller than in the United States. Generally true?
Absolutely true. I can make a comparison to maybe an Olive Garden or Maggiano's here, where they literally give you enormous portions, so much that you can only have a single course for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
In Italy, you'll find that the dining experience is to be enjoyed over time and with family and friends, over conversation. So you're expected to, you don't have to, but you're expected to order a couple of different courses, starting with antipasto, before pasta, then a pasta dish, and then a meat course and or a fish. And they bring it to you in kind of a timed allotment, as you probably experienced while you were there in Italy. And they accompany each course with wine, and the house wine is usually the way to go for the most part because they do a wonderful job of serving great wine for cheap. And the portions are small enough where you can enjoy each course without being stuffed. But at the end of your meal, you know you've had a wonderful meal.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to sit down and enjoy your company of your friends and family. And don't be afraid to ask for guidance from the server. They will give you tips and information about the house specialty, about the special of the evening, if there happens to be a particular vegetable and or meat or pasta sauce in season, if you will. So don't be afraid to ask for some guidance on everything and every course. They're happy to help. And if you let them guide you, it'll make the experience so much better.
And at the end of the meal, then, of course, you'd want to have a little limoncello.
Exactly right.
It's a great after-dinner drink, native to southern Italy and found everywhere. And so limoncello is the way to go. Catherine in Madison, let's give you a chance. Hi, what's on your mind today?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. We have been to Italy before and are planning on going this coming April, the 7th through the 23rd. Landing and flying out of Rome. My question to you is first about weather, what to expect, but also what would be realistic as far as travel to other parts of Italy on either side of a week that we're spending in Cortona at a villa there.
Very nice. Well, as far as the weather goes, the best thing to do is if you visit weather.com, they'll give you some insights on averages and things. In April, I found I have been there in April and May, and it's a little bit touch and go in April. It could be a little bit cooler. So just be prepared for either nice weather, bring a sweater and a jacket to make sure that you're prepared for that. Shouldn't have a problem. As far as getting around from Cortona, Cortona is wonderful, by the way. There are plenty of train stops. Now, Cortona is a little bit more difficult to get to and get to and around. But once, if you rent a car or enjoy the train system, you can get around and see most of Tuscany, including Florence and Siena. And I highly recommend that. If you're, and how many days will you be there?
It's about 12. We probably will have a car in the Cortona area. My thought was, is there any way that we'd be able to go directly from Rome for a few days to somewhere and then also at the other end of our, the week in Cortona? Is it even realistic to think about Naples or, you know, going that far by train or whatever other way there might be available?
Certainly. Well, Naples would be a bit of a commitment coming from Cortona, getting down to Rome. But if you could, if you can manage it and you want to enjoy the train ride and maybe do it during the day so you can enjoy the sights along the way, I would recommend, as opposed to getting down to Naples, maybe staying around the Tuscany area and digging into either Florence and Siena or spend just a few days in Rome and enjoy that. I think too much travel sometimes when you're there, getting from city to city, can be a little bit stressful and take away from the enjoyment. So my advice is maybe save Naples for the next trip. And dig into Rome, because Cortona and the Tuscan countryside with the hill towns will give you more than enough things to see, do, and enjoy, wonderful food and wine. But if you want to get Rome in there, you can absolutely do it on the back end of the trip, no question.
Okay, great. Thank you for your...
All right. And again, if you want more information, go to your website. And again, that is...
UnaBellaVista.com.
Okay. Catherine, thanks for the call. Let's go to Jeff next in Fox Point. And Jeff, what can we do for you?
Yeah, good morning. Enjoying the show. Just came back from Italy. And a couple quick questions, and I'll listen to the answer off the air. We were very confused as far as the tipping procedure in both bars and restaurants to the point where at one time I actually had a server give my tip back to me, telling me it wasn't necessary, that it's just you Americans.
Right.
you know, that's very uncommon to have an individual give back money, and at sometimes we saw that maybe the bartender or server was a little reluctant to take whatever may be left on the table as for a tip.
Sure.
The first question is, what is the normal procedure in Italy itself? And I don't know if it varies from region to region within Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And my second question is taking tours, walking or the double-deck bus tours.
Sure.
How do you deal with a tour guide that you know from previous classes throughout universities or whatever that is giving misinformation?
Oh, well, that's a good question.
Not so much in Italy, but on our first week over in England visiting Bath.
Mm-hmm.
Our tour guide was just giving some information that we found to be really out there, and we basically took this guy as entertainment more than anything informative.
Right. Both good questions. As far as the tipping is concerned, you're absolutely right. It just depends on the region, the city, and the time of year. And I know that's a vague answer, but if you're in Rome or Venice or Florence, during the tourist season, tipping is... not expected, but appreciated, and they'll usually take it. But it doesn't have to be a 20% tip like here in the United States. You can leave something. Best to give it directly to the server and say, thank you very much. We really appreciate your service and, you know, being such a great server to us. And they'll generally take it. The bars and restaurants operate a little bit differently in terms of they're often paid by the hour and aren't expected tips. And they don't usually will never get one from an Italian or another European. However, there's nothing wrong with it, and I often make it a practice to leave, you know, maybe 10% tip or something like that, and you really can't go wrong. If they give it back to you, you can politely decline and say, no, we really appreciate your service. Please, that's from us to you. And they'll be kind, and they'll usually bring you a free, you know, bit of dessert or a glass of wine or something by way of saying thank you. In terms of the other question and how to handle misinformation from guides, it's tough to do when you're in the middle of the tour. However, If you do some research before going and a little background on the guide that is giving the tour before you go, you can often avoid that situation. Anyone in Italy, specifically in or around the sites, that just walks up to you and says, you know, for 20 euro or something, I can give you a tour of the Colosseum, the Vatican Museums, things like that. That's illegal, actually, in Italy, and you have to be a certified guide in order to give tours. So anyone that just randomly walks up to you is either going to be a bad tour guide or working illegally, and they can stop the tour right in the middle of it and find either the guide who's giving the tour and or the people that are taking the tour. It doesn't happen too often, but just be aware that might be the case. Specific to Italy, two companies that I work with and know for a fact that they give excellent tours, so you can avoid that, is Context Rome. They do wonderful walking tours, not only in Rome, but in Florence and in Naples and in Venice and different parts of Italy. And then Walks Inside Rome, and they do excellent work, so you won't have to worry about bad information. They are all at least master's degrees or PhDs in art history or another discipline, so that they can give you the most of the tour. And the best part is they all speak English incredibly well. They also speak Italian if you choose to do that, but their native language, for the most part, is English.
Yes, they do carry credentials, and everyone watches to make sure that whoever is doing tours is one of their certified people. I did see that and was aware of that. You won't have just someone walking up in street clothes saying, I'll take you on a tour.
Right.
Jeff, thank you very much for the call, and glad you enjoyed your trip there. We're talking with Anthony Capolista, who is the author of Una Bella Vista Rome, How to Tour Italy, the first of his book, Capozzoli, I think is what I should be saying for your last name. Got a little confused there for a moment. Italy, family-friendly vacation, suitable for taking children with?
Oh, I think so. I really do. You know, you will do a lot of walking. A previous caller mentioned that she went with her 11-year-old and did tons of walking throughout Rome. It's really hard to avoid that. And I don't recommend not walking. So as long as the children are up to, you know, full day of a walking tour and enjoying the sights, it can be a wonderful experience. You know, you can also fit in. There's lots of interesting and fun things to do, some outdoor activity, whether it be biking or swimming or hiking and different things throughout the regions of Italy. So you might want to split it up between the museum visits and some fun outdoor activities for the children so that they also enjoy their vacation. But it's a great place to bring the kids.
Tom and Madison, let's get you into the conversation. Go ahead. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, Tom. Yes, I'm moving actually from Chicago to Madison. So,
okay.
Very much happy to be with Tom tonight fairly soon. I was just a comment about the fellow who called before about the environmental impact of travel, and I'm also a tall ship captain in Michigan and around the Great Lakes and on the coast, and I've had many, many friends and fellow sailors who have seen a whole chunk of the world sailing around the world on environmentally sound sailing ships.
Mm-hmm.
and also receiving college credit for that, and it's a wonderful way of putting travel and adventure and practicality all together at the same time. The question is, I have a trip planned hopefully to Florence and all around Italy in the fall, and I was going to be in the company of a wonderful young woman who grew up in Florence but left before she was about 7 or 8 years old. So what would be a really nice place to take her in Florence?
Great question. Now, when you say takers, do you mean a museum or a restaurant or a hotel?
Up to you.
Wow, that is a really good question. I think it would depend on what her interests are, and what I mean by that, and I'm not trying to avoid the question. I think there are lots of wonderful hotels. You don't have to stay in a 5-star, but a nice 4-star for her would be great in the center. One of my favorite things to do is to take a walk over called Piazza Vecchio, which means the old bridge, and do it at night. You can walk through and enjoy all of the statues around the Loggia, which is the main square of Florence, and then around the Uffizi, and then enjoy a dinner on the other side of the Arno. So you walk over Ponte Vecchio, the old bridge, and enjoy a nice meal where most of the Florentines will go to eat. They don't often eat near Piazza Signoria, which is the main area for the tourists and all of the sites. So my advice to you would be to take her a little bit deeper into Florence and get in and enjoy what the Florentines do. And if you'd like, you can visit my website and send me an email, and I'll make some specific recommendations of restaurants on the other side for you if you'd like.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Tom, are you a biker? Bicycling?
Yes.
There is a wonderful trip that takes off from that Ponte Vecchio, which is iBikeItaly.com, and they'll take you up into the hills so you get a view of Florence from the top.
Oh, sounds excellent. Sounds excellent. And from an art point of view, recommendations?
From an art point of view?
Open your eyes and look around.
Yeah, there's
Lovely.
Lots of great things. I would say, for sure, carve some time out to enjoy the Uffizi, mm-hmm. The painting gallery there. It's literally miles of wonderful artwork and an important piece of the visit to Florence. The Loggia, and of course, the Statue of David by Michelangelo, which you can see at it's called the Academy in English.
And that's the piece de resistance. Tom,
it
good
really
luck to
is.
You. Thanks very much for the call. We'll take more of your calls in just a minute. We're talking with the author of unabellavista.com, or Una Bella Vista Rome, and Anthony Capozzoli of Chicago is the author, and we'll get it together and pause and come back for your calls in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard with you on the Ideas Network. Happy to have you along as we talk about Rome and Italy with Anthony Capozzoli, who's the author of Una Bella Vista Rome. It's a new travel guide just out, and if you're thinking of a trip in 2008, he can discuss the topics like must-see sites for that vacation in Rome, ways to experience the best of Rome on a budget, how and when to start planning your trip, Rome in a day, what to see when you're crunched for time, tips for packing for a trip to Italy, backpacking through Italy, and how podcasts are revolutionizing the tourism industry. And Anthony, again, thanks very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
I'm getting hungry thinking about the great meals that someone is going to find there.
Absolutely. That's one of my favorite pieces or components of a visit to Rome. In fact, if you visit another website that I participate in as, I guess, the Rome contributor or the Italian contributor for the content for the site, it's iKangaroo.com, and I cover it's a Campo di Fiori, and I have a list of restaurants, about eight, that you could visit with a little description of what they each have by their specialty and a way to kind of dig in a little and find some of the finer points of a meal there in Italy. It's wonderful.
Is that EYE Kangaroo?
iKangaroo, as in just the letter I.
The letter I, okay. iKangaroo.com. All right. And your website, of course?
Is www.unabellavista.com.
All right. Let's go back to the calls, and we'll go to Marion in Madison next. Hello, Marion.
Hello. I had the pleasure of taking a trip to Italy last March. And I would like you to comment on the lines, because we were there in Rome on a Monday and a Tuesday, and the lines were enormous. And this was considered the off-season. It was early March. Had we not been on a tour, we would have been in line for 3-4 hours at least. The line to get into the Vatican Museums was, my guess, approximately 3 blocks long.
Yeah,
there's a way to get around that, though, isn't there, Anthony?
There really is. There are two ways, actually. First, in terms of waiting in line, you're absolutely right. Without planning ahead and just visiting Rome without having purchased, tickets or reservations to some of the key museums, it's very difficult, and you'll find yourself waiting. And you have to be careful, because a lot of times the museums only limit visits per X number of people per day. So if you reach that cap, they will just shut the museum down, and you won't be able to get in. If you plan ahead, you can purchase reservations online and securely, so that when you arrive, you pick up your reservation and you know that at 9:15 I'm going to see the Borghese Museum. Now, the Vatican's a little bit different, because they don't allow reservations, and many websites will promise that the walking tour, if you purchase this walking tour, you don't wait in line, you can get right in. That is and isn't true. It just depends on the relationship that the guide has with the museum and who's working the door and if they're able to fit you in, so you have to be cautious. My advice for the Vatican is to make sure, A, that it's open on the day that you're visiting, because it is closed on any and all religious holidays. And the other part of it is, if you go in the afternoon, visit another part of Rome during the morning, and then go in the afternoon when the lines are quite a bit thinner, you can get in with a few minutes wait and you're not going to be literally elbow-to-elbow with people walking through the Vatican Museums into the Sistine Chapel. So that would be my advice to kind of manage your time for the Vatican.
Marian, thanks very much for the call. We've got to move ahead. We've got people waiting, and we also want to take some emails, including John in Park Falls, who said, I've traveled in Italy and worked as a marketing consultant for the Italian Ministry of Foreign Trade. I've eaten my way from one end of the boot to the other. I love the country. Favorite town is Gubbio, a lovely old town built on the slopes of Mount Ingino, is it?
Yeah, Ingino.
Ingino in Umbria, not far from Perugia, the candy city, a lovely part of Italy. Have you some familiarity with Gubbio?
Personally, I have not been, so I won't be able to speak intelligently on it. I apologize.
Mm-hmm.
But he's right. I mean, eating your way up and down the boot is one of the finest ways to enjoy an Italian vacation.
Let's go to Jim in Racine. And Jim, what's on your mind?
Well, a few years back, I think it's almost 18 now, one of the film companies in Japan bought the rights to film the Sistine Chapel, and then they cleaned it. And it's been very controversial because a lot of people say that it ended up becoming a Walt Disney cartoon because of the solvents that they used in terms of the cleaning. The other thing is I'd like to know where the baths of Caracalla are.
Sure.
One secret thing in Rome that you would take people to, if I was in Chicago, I'd take them to St. Michael's Roman Catholic Church, and about Rimini and a Fellini tour. Rimini was Fellini's hometown. Like,
right.
Talk about that.
That's great. Well, first, with the Sistine Chapel restoration, you're right. It's always controversial, especially when you're touching one of the masterworks of one of the world's most famous artists. People are always either very, very happy or very, very upset about touching it simply due to its integrity. However, they are able to recognize the hand of Michelangelo there and identify its wonderful color that he applied. What they did is stripped away centuries, if you will, of buildup from the candles and the smoke and the use of the Sistine Chapel to elect popes and the use of it just in its general everyday use. So, where do I fall on that fence? I've seen it both ways, unrestored and restored, and seeing it restored is an absolutely wonderful experience. The colors are just absolutely alive, and they know that they are truly Michelangelo's colors by some of his other frescoes that he had painted in his use of, ingenious use of color, I should say. So I don't think it messed with the integrity as much as people say. But I agree with you that we have to be very, very careful when restoring masterworks like that. The second question, where are the baths of Caracalla? You will find information on the baths of Caracalla in my final tour, my walking tour, and it's in the Vincoli tour, and it's very near San Pietro in Vincoli, and it is the other side of the Colosseum. So there is a park called Parco del Celio. If you walk south of there, you'll be able to run into the baths of Caracalla, and it's absolutely worth a visit. It's a wonderful place. Caracalla was a ruthless emperor. But you're able to understand and experience life in a Roman bath and the different versions. They had gymnasiums there, and they gave lectures and philosophical discussions, so it's a great visit.
You described that as the walls 140 feet high, and today it's
yep.
used as a concert hall in the summer.
It really is. So you can enjoy it during the day to walk the tour, and then at night, if you're lucky enough and there's a performance, you can enjoy an opera or a musical performance there, even a play. So it's a great location.
We're talking with Anthony Capizzoli, who is the author of Una Bella Vista, Rome, How to Tour Italy, the first of a series of books that he's planning on Italy. Fascinated, in love with Italy, and anyone who goes there, I think, feels the same way. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number in Madison is 263-1890. Otherwise, toll free at 800-642-1234. Are you familiar with Ostia Antica?
I am. It's wonderful. In fact, if you don't have time to get to Naples to enjoy Pompeii or Herculaneum as the destroyed cities, if you will, from the volcanic eruption, Ostia Antica is an ancient Roman port that is very well preserved that will give you a wonderful insight and perspective on ancient Roman living. And they have tours directly from Rome to Ostia Antica. You can take a bus and be dropped off there for the day to enjoy the sights. I highly recommend it, in fact. One of the days, if you have more than 3 days in Rome, one of the days should very well be spent getting out there to enjoy what it was like in ancient Roman dwellings, because they have preserved it very well. You can see their restaurants and bars that they would have, the homes that they lived in, the way they would entertain themselves. So it's absolutely worth a visit.
It's a beautiful swimming pool with a mosaic that is about 55 by 60 feet of a man in a carriage being pulled by horses. It's just a fascinating place. And on the last day of our trip in September, we stayed in a farmhouse that was adjoining Ostia Antica. The property line then turned into a farm, and there we stayed in the farmhouse, and the woman who cooks for the estate then made a dinner for us, five or six courses, and she did it all in her kitchen with her wood cook stove, and it was just one of the greatest meals that I've ever had in my life.
Isn't that fantastic? And that's the kind of thing, if you experience Italy independently without going on the double-decker bus or following a group of 60 people following the flag that I'm sure that you saw when you were there, you will get to enjoy experiences like that. If I can tell a very quick story, if that's okay.
Sure.
I was up in Cinque Terre, up on the kind of the northwest side of Italy, and walking what they call the Path of the Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And we were walking through a vineyard on a little path, and my wife said, you know, to me in English, you know, I have to go to the bathroom. And we were in the middle of, you know, the woods, nowhere. And there was just one house with a gentleman, an older Italian man, smoking a cigarette and drinking a glass of wine over his balcony, overheard her, invited us to go in the house, use his bathroom. His wife made us lunch. We had some of his wine that he made right there on the vineyard and spent about 3 hours with him chit-chatting and walking through the vineyards. And that never would have happened had we been in a big tour group. But because we were by ourselves, they bring you in with open arms to enjoy their home, share a little bit of their wine, and they're very excited when people come and experience the culture beyond the big tour groups. They really like it when you try to dig in and be a part of their lifestyle.
And let's talk about the Cinque Terre. I was there a couple of years ago. You've got a number of towns that you can take the ancient path along the coast. A beautiful view of, is it the Ligurian Sea there?
Yes, it is.
And just one of the most beautiful scenes that you will ever find in your life. And you walk from town to town, maybe have breakfast in one, lunch in another, go down and have dinner, and then later that night at a third. It's just a fascinating place to walk and to really just enjoy yourself.
Absolutely true. And the food is fantastic. The limoncello, they often argue, between the southern region and the limoncello made from there, which is the best. I think you have to decide for yourself which you like more. And it's also very famous for the pesto sauce that we're so used to here in the United States. It comes from that specific region, and to see or have a dish of pesto there, either over gnocchi or pasta, is just a wonderful experience. And it's much lighter there than it is here.
Certainly. Dan in Chilton, let's get you into the conversation. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
My family is planning to go to Italy in July to visit last year's foreign exchange student that we hosted. I've been taking notes and listening to the show, and I'm getting so excited I can hardly wait. But I was wondering if you had any tips for how to get there. We're going at an expensive time of the year, I realize, but the flights are pretty expensive, and I wondered if there's a secret to getting there.
It's a great question. I wish I was able to give you some great insight on how to find the cheapest fare. What I often do is set up fare watchers on multiple websites so that I'm alerted any time that there is a good fare, and jump on it when you get the chance. If it is a flight, if you can get direct, even better. But to save money, you'll have to usually get connections. And flying either into Rome or Milan are two of your best bets, simply because they're the biggest and busiest airports. So if you set up the kind of fare watchers and go from there and then jump on the chance when a ticket that meets your price threshold comes across, if you take it right away, it's your best bet. The other thing that you might be able to do is look at the packages that include airfare and hotel. Now, you have to be careful because they demand that you stay at this hotel for this number of days and that kind of thing. And if that fits into your profile, that's often another way to get there a little bit cheaper than just buying a flight individually.
Dan, will you be staying with this family that you're going to visit?
Some of the time we'll be staying with them. Other times we want to stay near them so that we're, because they're going to be basically our tour guides, which will be really handy.
And where are they located?
They live in Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Great.
Then you'll be flying into Rome for sure.
Yeah. Now, what is this Fare Watchers? Is that a website?
No, what I mean by that is if you hit Expedia, Travelocity, some of the major airlines, American Airlines, Delta, United, and set up email alerts so that you'll be alerted directly when a fare comes across from your beginning location. I'm expecting that to be Milwaukee.
Milwaukee or Chicago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Milwaukee or Chicago to Rome. And those are actually pretty good fares to watch out for. So if you set things up so that you're email alerted, you'll be notified that this fare is available at this price, and then you can purchase it directly online.
Okay, great.
All right, Dan, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. I'm sorry we can't get to more callers. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in travel and traveling to Italy. As you became such a traveler yourself, Anthony, it's been a pleasure to be talking with you. And if people are interested in travel to Rome, Una Bella Vista, How to Tour Italy is a good way to go. And it also includes tours that people can listen to on an iPod or an MP3 player.
Absolutely. And I've got some free podcasts available on iTunes that can be downloaded to help you plan your trip as well.
So go to the website for more information. Again, that is
unabellavista.com, and it's spelled UNABELLA, V as in Victor, ISTA.com.
Thanks very much for being with us today. Been a real pleasure.
Have a great day. Thanks for having me.
And our thanks also to Cheryl Gasser for production, on-air production as well. I'm Jim Packard, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.